You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What a win. On that positive note, welcome in to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. Because it's Wednesday, that means it's Draft Wednesday across this Locked On Podcast Network. Download the Draft app or go to draft.com and use the promo code LORockets. And when you make your initial deposit, you can get a $3 ticket to try their service for free. And folks, just imagine if you had had James Harden in your draft league tonight. 41 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, hopefully some of you did, leading the Rockets to one of the more impressive victories of the entire season, 109-101 in Miami on the back end of a road back-to-back, a brutal one. We'll talk about that throughout the program. No Ryan Anderson with an ankle injury, no Eric Gordon with a back injury, both considered minor. Trevor Ariza still out with a hamstring injury. We'll see what his status is when they get back to Houston tomorrow. But yet, despite all of those factors, the Rockets not getting their hotel until 3:45 in the morning local time, being without 41 points combined of production in Eric, Trevor, and Ryan. Despite all of those circumstances, the Rockets having an early 17-point lead, having it whittled away, going down 4, the Rockets buckled down and got a win that at the end of the day was not even close. James Harden, 41 points, as we mentioned, did it on 13 of 25, laser efficient from the field, 5 of 12 from behind the arc, 10 of 12 from the free throw line. Started well in the first half. Seemed like he hit a little bit of a fatigue wall in the third quarter, but he went to the bench, and when the Rockets needed it in the fourth quarter, boy, did he ever deliver, punctuated by 2 back-to-back threes in the final 3 minutes to push the lead from 7 to 13. Then, in the final minute, after the Heat were trying to make one final run, picked off a pass in the open floor and then had basically a touchdown assist to James Harden, from James Harden to Chris Paul, for the layup that effectively put the game away and sealed the 109-101 win. The Rockets, with the victory, now 40-13 on the year. That is the best start in franchise history through 53 games, even better than the NBA championship team from 93-94. That's the first team, the best record in franchise history at 58-24. There's a damn good shot, it looks like, barring injury, that will go down this year. And perhaps best of all, with the Warriors losing by 20 last night to the Thunder, the Rockets have now tied the Warriors in the loss column, but have the tiebreaker for the best record of the NBA and home court throughout the playoffs. Technically, the Rockets trail by half a game because the Rockets have played one fewer game than the Warriors. As I've said plenty of times, if you listen to me here on Locked On Rockets, you know the loss column, when you have teams like the Rockets and Warriors that lose as rarely as they do, is the loss column you want to focus on. And folks, with last night's Warriors loss and the Rockets avoiding what seemed like an almost certain schedule loss tonight, the Rockets have caught the Warriors with under 30 games to go. And it's amazing to think about, but that number one seed, home court throughout the playoffs, it is right there on the table for the Rockets, especially with the Warriors not just losing games, but losing games by a lot. That's 2 games in the past week, lost by 30 to the Jazz, 20 last night at home to the Thunder, where they were not even competitive. So all of a sudden, the doubts, you're hearing the excuses from Steve Kerr about mental and physical fatigue there. The Rockets, despite the injuries, all the excuses that they could throw out themselves, finding ways to put out even more effort. Just as last week we saw when the Rockets had a 7-man rotation, James Harden offset it with a 60-point triple-double, the first ever in the history of the NBA to bring home that win against a game Orlando team. At the same time, in the same fashion, James did it tonight with 41 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, all on above 50% shooting from the field. And that's against Miami team, again, that 29-26, a winning team that was at home, a team that historically, led by Hassan Whiteside and Goran Dragic, give the Rockets all sorts of fits, especially defensively. But the Rockets having every excuse in the book to be tired and say, well, it's a bad matchup against a winning team on the road, fourth game of a 4-game road trip, second game of a brutal road back-to-back. They did not let it get to them, and it wasn't, as we mentioned last week, it was James Harden having to add the 60-point triple-double. Tonight, he only, in air quotes, had 41 points on 52% shooting. But folks, Chris Paul, yeah, he gave James the support that he did not have in that Orlando game. Chris Paul, 24 points, 7 assists, 7 rebounds, but most impressively he did it on 10 of 19 shooting from the field. It's incredible how impressive it is to see both backcourt guys shoot over 50% in that setting with such little help. Both played 36 minutes. You couldn't rest them. Didn't have the help you would expect them to have. As far as the rest of the lineup, not bad. Clint Capella certainly 13 points, 8 rebounds, 6 of 8 shooting in 29 minutes against Hassan Whiteside. That's solid. Luke Bamute and P.J. Tucker, the first game all year that they've started alongside each other at the 3 and 4 spots because they really had no choice with Trevor, Eric, Ryan all out. They gave you 37 minutes in Luke's case, 41 in P.J. They gave you minutes and good defense, which mattered a lot. Held the Heat to just 21 points in the fourth quarter, 101 overall for such limited rotation. They gave you the minutes, but from a shooting standpoint, it's not like there's anything to write home about. Luke and P.J. Combined 3 of 8 from the field. Gerald Green, solid off the bench, 3 of 8, 2 of 6 from 3, 12 points in his 26 minutes, but nothing otherworldly like his performance last night in Brooklyn or Saturday in Cleveland when he made 4 threes. Nene in the first half was pretty solid, ended up with 7 and 5 for the game, which we'll do. But the bottom line is the Rockets had an incredibly short rotation, short enough that Markell Brown on a two-way contract actually had to give them 16 minutes, and at least defensively, he contributed. He had some energy out there, but the Rockets, we mentioned the fatigue. The Heat, certainly Goran Dragic, had 30 points and 11 of 17 shooting. We know the walking matchup nightmare that Hassan Whiteside usually is, 16 points, 17 rebounds he had tonight. Josh Richardson, of all players, had 30 points on 7 of 9 from behind the arc. Folks, the Heat did not play that poorly. They shot the ball relatively well, over 40% from 3. And despite all those factors, they out-rebounded the Rockets 41-35. But folks, when your backcourt is James Harden and Chris Paul, and they're able to score a combined 65 points on over 50% shooting from the field, folks, that's just absurd. It's amazing what you can overcome when you have those two guys clicking on all cylinders. And to some extent, you expect it from them. They are James Harden and Chris Paul for a reason. They're two virtually certain Hall of Famers, even if they retire tomorrow. James Harden, I would say, certainly another statement in his MVP case to where he's the clear front runner. Now, certainly what he's done for the Rockets, now 10 of 11 since his return from a grade 2 hamstring injury, what many consider a premature concern. Also, any of his other rivals, LeBron James, Stephen Curry, they've certainly fallen off the pace of late. But yes, you expect those things of Chris and especially James, but to do it on night 2 of a road back-to-back, on night 4 of a 4-game road trip, boy, this is one where the Rockets had every excuse in the book not to have this effort. Yet, if you're going to catch the Warriors, if you're going to actually run down the most talented team in NBA history over 82 games and get home court throughout the playoffs, which is probably your best shot at beating them 4 times out of 7 to have games 1, 2, and then the critical often tiebreakers 5 and 7 in your gym at Toyota Center in Houston, Texas, the best way for you to do that is to not give away schedule losses. And on a night when the Rockets would have had every excuse to say, oh, it's okay, they've had a hell of a road trip anyway, so many positive signs, they got greedy. They didn't just take 3 out of 4, they took all 4. And on a night when they got into the gym at, or got into their hotel at 3:45 a.m. local time, only got to the gym a couple hours before the tip and had every excuse to sleepwalk, they didn't. And it goes to show you everything that's special about this Rockets team, certainly from a talent perspective, led by James Harden and Chris Paul, but also just their general mentality, their grit, their grinding. They have so many things that make up elite championship level teams and their qualities. That's what this Rockets team, now at 40-13, the best start in franchise history, is showing you. And tonight, especially when you consider the headwinds, not just for James and Chris, but I would say the team as a whole, under the radar, it's one of the more banner and I would say substantive wins of the entire season. And perhaps it comes at a very appropriate time, the day before tomorrow's trade deadline, which we'll be talking about in just a little bit on the back half of this program. Now we're going to get back into our 3 points recap. Well, a little bit of a different 3 points recap, more like 2 points, and then our trade deadline preview show. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome friends and sponsors over at the Draft app, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily program covering your Houston Rockets. And folks, as I said earlier, just imagine if you had played either James Harden or Chris Paul in your draft leagues tonight. Well, with their 65 points combined, 41 for James, 24 for Chris, both over 50% from the field. Chris with 7 rebounds and 7 assists as well. Yeah, if you play them on draft, you could have made a lot of money, and that's especially relative to other fantasy sites, because studies show that draft your odds when you play there are 80% better than on those rival salary cap sites. That's why Draft is my favorite site. You're not getting crushed by the pros. You're not getting taken advantage of by the system. And it's not just me either. The facts show that more than 1 million people have either downloaded that Draft app or played at draft.com. In part, it's because of the comparative benefits. Also, because it's so simple. You can play in a real live draft whenever you're listening to this podcast or whenever it's best at your convenience. Drafts are done in under 5 minutes and you get paid out the next day. The simplicity of it, drafts fill out every second, so you can join one on your timetable whenever it's best for you. But the real perk of this, of course, for my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, y'all all get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit just by using the promo code LORockets. That's right, you play in a real money draft for free when you make that initial deposit. You get a free $3 ticket, which you can use to try the service for free. That's by using the LO Rockets promo when you make your deposit. And then if you're not satisfied with their service for whatever reason, Draft is so confident that won't be the case that they are actually offering Locked On Rockets listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. So to take advantage of our special and support our sponsors who are responsible for us bringing this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering the Rockets, just search for Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with the promo code LORockets. So jumping back into the program, so the first segment just espousing the wondrous virtues of this victory from certainly James Harden, 41 points, 13 of 25 shooting. Chris Paul, 24, 7-7, 10 of 19. So many great individual performances that you can look at, especially from your two franchise players who stepped up on a night when the Rockets, lacking depth in the absence of Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, sorely needed their franchise players to step up. And just as you mentioned last night, the offense stepped up for the defense on a night when it was a little lethargic. Well, tonight, with the role players suddenly just beset by all these injuries, they needed the star players to step up and do a lot of the heavy lifting, and that's what Chris and James did. But as far as the win as a whole, certainly Chris and James are the flag wavers for this team, but the success goes far beyond just those two guys. And I would say, as we mentioned, lots of under-the-radar quality performances in this game. Nene and Gerald Green off the bench. Even 16 solid defensive minutes from Markel Brown. Clint Capella, 13-8 in the middle, holding his own to some degree against Hassan Whiteside. Plus 4 the Rockets were in Clint Capella's 29 minutes. P.J. Tucker giving the Rockets 41 minutes with a team-high plus 16 in there. Played some great defense on James Johnson, on the low block late in that game. Luke Bamute giving them 37. It's a team effort when you get a win like this, despite the headwinds. So I want to make sure that the Rockets as a team get their due, and I also want to explore the injuries and why, at this point, I'm not overly concerned. I do want to address them, because anytime you have three players in your rotation, a combined 41 points of production out with injuries, yeah, it's a big deal, but I'm not especially worried at this point in time. With Trevor, we've mentioned before, it's not a grade 2. They said it's less severe than James Harden, so that probably means it's a grade 1. But even a grade 1 hamstring strain, that's typically at a minimum 7 to 10 days, and that's at a minimum. It can easily be 2 to 3 weeks, depending on exactly how the player responds. As of tonight, it's been 9 days since it happened, or 10 days. Yeah, it's Wednesday, so it's been 10 days since it happened last Sunday against Phoenix. If you absolutely wanted to push it, maybe you could think about having him out there, but with this being a road trip, the travel conditions and the fact that you're about to come home for two games over the weekend anyway, there's no reason to push the envelope with a player who is 32 years old. There's no reason to be that reactionary. Yes, the Rockets want the one seed, but they also want to make sure that they are as healthy as possible going to the playoffs. They want to be able to accomplish both goals. So even with the injuries, there's, and some of them not really being fully aware of until last night's game, such as the Ryan Anderson ankle situation, there's no reason to just suddenly change your plans with Trevor on a dime. I'm not that overly concerned about that. Ryan and Eric, let's discuss that. Ryan with the turned ankle last night. Mike said, head coach Mike D'Antoni, that he could have played in better circumstances, did not, maybe because of the back-to-back, possibly because of the sleep. That's the angle that I'm buying the most. Eric Gordon, they wouldn't call it a setback, said there was still some back soreness, missed a couple of games, basically 2.5 games before returning last night, scored 13 points, 5 of 9 shooting in 28 minutes. The key thing to consider in this is not just the back-to-back, but the sleep component to it. The Rockets got to their hotel at 3:45 a.m. By the time they actually had a chance to wind down, Craig Ackerman, who I had on the show earlier in the week, lead play-by-play broadcaster for the Rockets, said he got to bed, yeah, about 5:30. By the time he was actually wound down, got his head to the pillow. That is not conducive to getting to the gym at 5 p.m. the next day and playing a basketball game at 7 o'clock that evening. It happens less, fortunately, in the NBA than it used to. The NBA has cut down on the back-to-backs for this reason. They've especially cut down on the extensive travel back-to-backs. To this point in the season, early on, the Rockets, they had the one back-to-back out of the chute, Golden State and Sacramento. But again, going from Golden State to Sacramento, that's basically a 20-minute plane flight. It's less than 90 miles to get from Oakland to Sacramento. In December, they had one, San Antonio-Milwaukee, but both were in Houston. The game's over at 10, and you can go and sleep in your own bed. Back-to-back is still not ideal, but at least you can get your normal 7, 8, 9, 10-hour sleep, whatever it may be. And, of course, athletes tend to sleep a lot more because of the incredible physical demands put on their bodies. They had a little bit of a tough one in late December, going from Boston to D.C., and that one not nearly as bad as going from Brooklyn to Miami. But I don't think it's a coincidence. Boston to D.C. was the worst one they'd had before this one. And that performance in D.C. on a Friday night might have been the most flat Rockets showing of the entire year. And I think the legs had something to do with that. So to be able to go all the way from Brooklyn to Miami, that is a brutally long plane flight. Folks, it makes it all the more incredible what the Rockets did. But from an injury perspective, what studies have shown, and this is the new science of the NBA, and the Rockets is one of the more data-inclined organizations in the league, you better believe that they are aware of that, is that when you're playing on reduced sleep, which you typically are, when you get in at that time of the night, and typically there's not that many of these throughout the course of the year, this is one. There's another one next week, which is why I want to talk about it. But folks, if you have any minor injuries, like anything muscular, ligaments, whatever's out there, then folks, yeah, you're at a greater risk of aggravation. It's been shown that, yes, there is an increased risk of injury, just little muscle pulls, sprained ankles, whatever it may be, from playing on these types of sudden back-to-backs, especially when you compound the normal back-to-back rigors with a lack of sleep. The one I can think of last year was when the Rockets had that big win in early December in Oakland over the Warriors, was especially late, went double overtime, and then they played the next night in Denver. Incredibly, they got that one as well, but in the final minute of that game, Trevor Ariza went back to the locker room with some pretty brutal back spasms. You could see him struggling a lot. Now, Trevor, as tough as he is, managed not to miss a game. But yes, he was hurting and limited for quite some time by those back spasms. And yeah, you better believe that he felt compromised. I talked to him about it a few days after that. And he mentioned, of course, how late they got in. It was 4 or 5 a.m., something ridiculous. And, you know, he said he probably got 3 or 4 hours sleep before getting to the gym that day. And of course, you could never prove exactly what the causation is. But when you look at the studies and the data that are out there, what it shows you is that, yes, you are at an increased risk of injury. So if you have an existing injury, like Ryan with an ankle or Eric with a back, even if it's minor, this is not the situation to play with it. So I'm not going to say that I'm not worried about them at all. I think we have to see what happens when they get back to Houston on Friday. If one or both of those guys is missing then at that point, maybe you need to have a little bit of concern about where they are at. We'll also see what happens when Trevor's hamstring is reevaluated. But for right now, I don't take it as any sort of a negative sign on the injuries other than just the incredible rigors of what amounts to a pretty rare and extreme back-to-back that you don't see that often in NBA circles. So that's why I'm not all that down about Ryan and Eric not playing tonight. I think it's just prudent of them, the Rockets, not to push them in this scenario because that's a classic setting for re-aggravation. And it's worth noting because, unfortunately, the Rockets have another one of these next Tuesday and Wednesday. Next Tuesday, they are in Minnesota. Then Wednesday, they are home against the Sacramento Kings before the All-Star break. So Minneapolis to Houston, that's a brutal late-night flight as well. Now, maybe it's a little bit better because you sleep in your own bed, but I don't know if it's that much better. I guess the one upside to the next back-to-back is that the toughest game, which of course is the second end of the back-to-back, at least after that one, the Rockets will have 8 consecutive days off as part of the All-Star break. So if there are any minor injuries that result from it, maybe you can let those heal up a little bit over the ensuing 8 or 9 days. That's a slightly better scenario than this one, where the Rockets got to get ready and play 2 more games on the weekend, starting with Friday against the Nuggets and then Sunday against the Mavs. So it's tough. It's good the Rockets got some experience with it because they're going to have to do it again next week. But ultimately, I think the Rockets handled it about as well as could be expected. And I'm sure that there's some of you that will probably say, well, can't they sleep on the plane or can't they sleep in? Well, folks, first off, plane sleep is not regular sleep. Even if you can catch an hour or two napping on the plane, not nearly the same in terms of REM cycles, all the other things that go into quality sleep. I know, I'm sure some people kind of get this impression because a lot of folks do red-eye business travel from time to time, and they go through a night in which they sleep 3 or 4 hours on a plane, maybe less than that, and then tough it out the next day. Well, folks, toughing out through a business meeting or two is not the same as playing in a 48-minute NBA basketball game against the highest competition. It's apples and oranges. So no, plane sleep, not exactly the same thing. And then when you get to the hotel, it goes back, like I said, I had a conversation with Trevor about this last year. Once, for me, it happened when I got to about 20, your body gets an internal alarm clock where, you know, even if for whatever reason, life happens sometimes, you don't get to bed till 4 or 5 o'clock, it's not like you can just, even if you have these blackout curtains, then suddenly just miraculously sleep till 2 or 3 in the afternoon. No, your body has a certain rhythm to it, a certain routine, and while you might be able to, even if your body wakes you up 8, 9 in the morning, it's hard for me, no matter what, sleep past 9 or so, even if all of a sudden you're able to get a nap later in the afternoon, it's not nearly the same as getting, for athletes, what is typically at least 10 hours of sleep. And there's studies, if you want to read sleep studies of the NBA, there's plenty of those. I posted one on my Twitter timeline at Ben Dubose earlier this afternoon. But LeBron James, who's maybe the most built, chiseled athlete of this era, this is a guy who tries to sleep 12 to 13 hours a day. That's how demanding and grueling this game is. So the reason I highlight this, you know, all this specific sleep innuendo is to point out that when it is compromised to the extent that it is, not just a back-to-back like 2 in a row at home or Golden State to Sacramento, a 20-minute plane flight, when you actually have to go Brooklyn to Miami, what feels like, of course it's on the East Coast, but basically from the north to the south, from winter to summer, essentially, in terms of how far it is and the resulting climate, it's tough on your body. So if you have any injury, even a minor one, there's no point to playing through it. So no, I'm not especially worried about the prognosis for Ryan Anderson or Eric Gordon. To me, it's just a sign of, unfortunately, what is the reality in the NBA. The NBA realizes it. They are lowering it. There's fewer of these than there have been in the past. But unfortunately, unless you cut the season fewer than 82 games or stretch the season out even more than it already is, starting in mid-October and going all the way through mid-April, the regular season, I don't think they want to do that, because you don't want to limit the offseason, which is already probably too short of reducing the number of games. There's always going to be at least a couple. It's unfortunate for the Rockets that two of them come within the same week. But the good news for the Rockets, they got wins on both in the front end, and they were able to do it without pushing guys that had known injuries. And to this point, at least, I did not see any of the 8 guys that went out there tonight laboring through anything that would seem to be worrisome. You never know until they get back to Houston. But so far, so good. And again, the Rockets 109-101 winners, improving to 40-13 on the season, a franchise best start through their first 53 games, and now tied with the tiebreaker with the Golden State Warriors for the league's best record in the loss column. So lots to be excited about these days. And again, they're back in action Friday night. I hope they get the reception they deserve at Toyota Center, because this is simply an incredible basketball team. And yeah, when they return home Friday against the Nuggets, weekend game against a likely playoff opponent, hopefully they get the reception from you guys at Toyota Center that they deserve. Now that'll do it for the game recap portion of this show. I'm cutting it a little bit short. We did have a long show last night as well, so I'm sure you've heard a lot about the day-to-day activities of the Rockets over the last 24 hours. The back half of the show, I'm going to discuss the trade deadline, because that's at 2 p.m. tomorrow. The Rockets playing as incredibly well as they are, 40-13 on the year. I am not expecting a major move, but certainly we know some of the rumors that are out there. Ryan Anderson's reportedly been quietly dangled. We heard a rumor tonight that maybe he's an option for the Kings if they want to move George Hill. The rumors there, one common theme throughout them, which is that the Rockets, it's not about who they would acquire, it's about potentially getting contracts that theoretically are more movable in the offseason, because Ryan Anderson or whoever occupies his approximate salary slot probably needs to go to Cleveland, and the deal they want to strike is part of an opt-in and trade for LeBron James. I doubt it happens. I don't think there's quite that much urgency for the Rockets to take a deal that isn't very good, to the point where it would be a decrease to the rotation of a team that's so good right now. And if it's a deal that would presumably upgrade the Rockets, then I don't know that there's incentive for the other team to do it, which is why the report out of the Sacramento Bee that's saying that, you know, that the Ryan Anderson, George Hill thing would theoretically be an option, also says the Kings don't appear to be interested in that. So either it won't fit for the Rockets if the contracts aren't especially good, why wouldn't you just keep Ryan Anderson, the basketball player that's been starting the vast majority of your games in a 40-13 team, and if it's significantly better, then why does that make sense for the other team to take on Ryan Anderson at $20 million for the next 2 years? Nonetheless, the Rockets have to do their due diligence because it's not a positive value contract, and it's viable to the Rockets. We'll discuss that. Also, there's some smaller moves they might could make, such as Tarik Black, Troy Williams, potentially creating roster spots for further buyout additions. We've tossed out some names over the past few weeks. Andrew Bogut's already out there. Jameer Nelson, Brook Lopez, those are names that have been rumored as possibilities. We'll have to see what happens. But yeah, for now, this will be where I break discussing just the day-in, day-out Rockets, culminated by tonight's 109-101 victory over the Heat, moving to 40-13. And then from here on out, we'll discuss the trade deadline and what I think the scenarios are going on in Daryl Morey's head leading up to tomorrow afternoon's 2 p.m. Houston time deadline. Now for the final segment of tonight's show, let's discuss the trade deadline. That's the elephant in the room. It's at 2 p.m. tomorrow, Houston time. Not expecting the Rockets to make any major moves, which I think is reasonable when you consider their lofty record right now and where they stand in the Western Conference. But nonetheless, it's Daryl Morey. We know he is at least doing his due diligence, regardless of any report out there. And to that matter, it's not that the reports are saying that they are dead silent. There have been rumors this week, both locally from Kelly Eco of ESPN Houston and nationally from Chris Mannix, saying that the Rockets do have interest or are at least quietly gauging the market in trading Ryan Anderson. So that's the potential domino that could fall tomorrow. I personally think it's very unlikely. I'll explain why again over the next few minutes. But first, I want to explain why this is something the Rockets are looking at. Yes, Ryan has been a starter for the vast majority of this year on a team that is really freaking good. And I don't think the Rockets are looking to move him for basketball reasons, even though he has been a bit of a disappointment, at least from the standpoint of having a 25-game shooting slump, although at least there have been a few signs of late that he seems to be turning that around. The issue for Ryan, of course, is the contract. We know this past offseason, the Rockets were very interested in Carmelo Anthony before he ended up going to the Oklahoma City Thunder. The stumbling block was the Rockets could not make the salaries match up without sending out Ryan Anderson, and ultimately that contract then, at $20 million a season for 3 years, was too rich for the Knicks' blood. They went with a package from Oklahoma City, headlined by Enes Kanter, whose deal had one fewer year on it, and that was the primary difference between what they got from OKC and what the Rockets were able to offer with Ryan. So for the Rockets moving forward, we know this summer they are interested in LeBron James. It might be the biggest thing that could ever happen to this franchise, short of winning a title, which amazingly is also on the table this year, especially with the Warriors' slump of late. But I think the Rockets know that, you know, winning a title is 1A, but LeBron James is 1B. It's that big of a deal to this franchise. It's arguably the greatest player in the history of the sport, and there's a clear and compelling case for why LeBron James would consider Houston. Obviously, it's a better supporting cast than the ridiculous situation he has in Cleveland right now. Rockets fans saw that firsthand last weekend in that game, and then beyond Houston having a contending roster, there's also the presence of Chris Paul, one of LeBron's best friends in the league. So there's lots of reasons for the Rockets to be interested in LeBron James, and there's lots of reasons for LeBron James to be interested in the Rockets. That's why we've been talking about it for months. What makes it tough is the math, because while we can't say that LeBron would 100% take the max only, at the same time, he's not going to play for the minimum, so to even get in the ballpark of a max or near-max deal, the Rockets would have to carve out room either through sending salaries out in a trade or getting that far underneath the cap in free agency. It is extremely unlikely for the Rockets to get that far, even to $20 million under the cap, let alone $30-35 in free agency, because right now the Rockets have $115 million payroll, and that's just with this current team that could actually have a payroll much higher than that next year by the time you factor in new deals for Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Trevor Ariza. Yes, you have bird rights, which allow you to exceed the cap to retain those guys, but even with the bird rights, to keep those requires a cap hole, so the Rockets would not be able to go under the cap, nowhere near enough to get in the ballpark for LeBron James without relinquishing those cap holes, which would essentially, barring those players being willing to play for the minimum, which is not realistic at all, be waving goodbye to the supporting cast that has the Rockets in a position to lure LeBron in the first place. So just as it wasn't likely last summer, now LeBron was not a, or not LeBron, Carmelo, excuse me, was not a free agent last summer anyway, but even if he were, it was not a realistic pathway because of the cap gymnastics that the Rockets would have had to do to make that work. Same way with Chris Paul, who the Rockets got in an opt-in and trade. That's what the Rockets are hoping that they can do with LeBron, because of the three options, one being signed as a free agent, two, a sign and trade, and three, the opt-in and trade. The opt-in to the final year of the contract and then trade at the end of June, the same way they got Chris Paul a year ago, is by far the most reasonable path, because it's the most compatible with retaining most of the role players that have this roster so attracted to LeBron in the first place. And then from a math standpoint, we explained why the free agency route, it's not realistic at all to see the Rockets getting $35 million under the cap with a payroll right now that, by extensions, is probably likely to be well over the luxury tax line next year. So it's not realistically under the cap. Also, a sign and trade, the issue with a sign and trade is that triggers a hard cap for you. Folks, right now, the Rockets are at $115 million. You're going to be looking just by the new deals for CP3, Clint Capella, and Trevor Ariza, potentially in the offseason, at being well above the hard cap just to bring back the current team, which thankfully new owner Tillman Fertitta has showed some willingness to do. That hard cap, though, which you would do if you're doing a sign and trade for LeBron, that's what you would trigger, is non-negotiable. So if you do a sign and trade for LeBron, you bring many of the same consequences that it would take to go underneath the cap. Maybe not quite as dire, but nonetheless, you would have to do some significant cuts to somehow make a roster with LeBron James, Chris Paul, James Harden, and all stay underneath the hard cap, which is approximately at $125 million, I believe, is expected to stay roughly flat from year to year, this season to the next. So because of the trouble that there is in the latter two scenarios, free agency or a sign and trade, you can't really keep the supporting cast, which is already on track to be kind of a payroll of $140 million or so, if we're giving conservative estimates to the new deals for Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, their potential raises. When you consider that, there's no real way to keep the team as attractive as it is now unless you do an opt-in and trade, which is essentially a leveraged trade, but without the problems of triggering the hard cap, essentially the same way the Rockets were able to get Chris Paul in late June a year ago. So that's what the Rockets are trying to position themselves for. And from a math standpoint, the easiest way to do it, LeBron's going to be making $35 million next year if he opts into the final year of his deal. Well, between Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, the Rockets, as an above-cap team, they would have to essentially match salaries, and Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson make nearly $34 million combined between the two of them. So it would be almost a perfect fit in terms of sending those two out and taking LeBron. So in theory, it's pretty easy from a player standpoint who the Rockets need to send out and how they can acquire LeBron James without significantly dampening the rotation to the current team. The problem is that, of course, Ryan Anderson is not likely to be a positive asset to the Cleveland Cavaliers for the same reason he was not seen as a positive asset to the Knicks or any other team around the NBA this past summer, and that's the contract. Not saying that he's a bad basketball player, but he's certainly not worth $20 million per year. So at some point, the Rockets are going to need to find teams around the NBA that would be willing to take that contract. And in theory, you could do it this summer, and I think that's probably a more likely option. I'll explain why, but you could also do it now and get some more manageable contracts. Now, I don't think the Rockets, well, no one even has enough cap room to take that full salary, even if they were willing to, but I think the idea is that, in theory, what if the Rockets traded him for more reasonable contracts now? They could. I think Daryl Morey has to do his due diligence, but I think the more likely scenario is that you move him to a third team this summer rather than the Cleveland Cavaliers, because the Cleveland Cavaliers offload LeBron James. They're obviously entering a rebuilding cycle. They're not going to be looking forward to giving Ryan Anderson that kind of money. So whether you do it now, this summer, the trouble is going to be finding a third team for Ryan Anderson. Now, I know some will say, I've seen some of the counter-narratives, that Cleveland might not want Eric Gordon either. Well, folks, I'm not worried about Eric Gordon. To me, Eric Gordon is a big asset in terms of making yourself viable to Cleveland. Eric Gordon, he won't even be 30 years old. This is a 29-year-old who is averaging close to 20 points a game and has been more than that when he's been called on to be a bigger option. We've seen how he stepped up his game in the absence of either Chris Paul or James Harden this year. When you have Eric Gordon at 29 years old, making just $13 million a year, a dynamic scorer, has been for most of his career a very efficient shooter as well, although that's dipped slightly this year. Folks, Eric Gordon, whether Cleveland wants him or not, he's a positive asset, and that's all that matters. If Cleveland doesn't want Eric Gordon, well, folks, all they got to do is call up a team with cap room, and if they want nothing but cap space, well, they can get that. Let's throw the Lakers an example. The Lakers are a team that's going to have cap room this summer, but it's already been reported this week that they are skeptical about their chances based on, I don't know, I guess they're not winning enough games. They feel like to appeal to the likes of Paul George, LeBron James, the veteran free agents on the market, and it's been reported by Adrian Wojnarowski and Ramona Shelburne of ESPN that they are, quote, recalibrating their focus towards 2019. Okay, well, if they're recalibrating their focus towards 2019, then they also probably realize why they are not that viable in 2018. That's because they're not winning enough games. So the Lakers, if they strike out as expected on the top tier of free agents this summer, they're going to have to look at the trade market. And when you look at the Lakers, all the young pieces they have right now, led by Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle, you know, Lonzo Ball, all the young core guys they have on that roster. Well, folks, Eric Gordon, with his stability as a scorer and as a shooter, he would fit in like a glove in terms of making the Lakers a better team, giving them the type of scoring presence veteran that they don't have now, might make them a potential playoff team next year and make them even more attractive to those 2019 free agents by virtue of improving the culture. So the reason I mentioned the Lakers example with Eric Gordon, even if the Cavs said, okay, Eric Gordon at 29, we're without LeBron, we need to rebuild, what purpose does Eric Gordon serve us? Okay, well then because Eric's a positive asset, they can find a team like the Lakers and then get cap space and probably picks and prospect considerations through that deal as well. The point is, Eric Gordon is not going to be a stumbling block to this trade. At his age and on his contract, unless there's some very unforeseen and serious injury or just a ridiculous downturn in his play, he is going to be seen as a positive asset. And for the Cavs, that's all that matters when you talk about rebuilding after LeBron James. It's the same way Daryl Morey with the Rockets between 2010 and 2012 did a lot of trades that on face value might not make that much sense, but one trade was always about setting up the next one. For example, Kyle Lowry, a point guard developing very well in his mid-20s, seemed like the perfect candidate for a young and rebuilding team like the Rockets to either build around or make available to other teams as a trade ship. Instead, in the summer of 2012, they actually took a step back. They traded Lowry for a lottery, basically a lottery guaranteed pick because of the reverse protection on the pick they got from Toronto, and that pick ultimately had more value in the deal to Oklahoma City that ultimately landed James Harden. So that's just one example, but the point is, when you make these deals, when you're a rebuilding team, you don't always get exactly what you're looking for in deal one. You just have to make sure you're getting positive assets. That's what Eric Gordon is. He's not going to be a problem. That $13 million is a positive asset whether Cleveland keeps him or flips him. It's the same way that Cleveland this past summer, you know, they traded for Kyrie Irving for a package that was headlined by the 2018 draft pick from Brooklyn. Well, folks, that deal does not make sense in terms of building around LeBron James, now 33 years old in his 15th NBA season, but it was about flexibility. It was about, okay, we can flip that later on if need be, if we need to win now, or we can keep it and use that as a rebuilding piece if LeBron moves on. It's about flexibility, and it's about having a positive asset, which is what that is. Eric Gordon, not saying he's a positive asset to the same extent as that, but a similar principle applies to where, you know, if you want to win now, if you can put some pieces together, they still have a lot of veterans under contract, or should, like Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, all the guys they've signed over the years, often to bloated deals, well then maybe you keep him, and if you want to rebuild, then you can flip him for picks and prospects and get some cap space that way as well. Point is, he's a positive asset. The Eric Gordon side of the equation is not going to be a problem. Ryan Anderson probably is, because he just doesn't really fit in Cleveland, especially with all the bigs they have up front. And then his salary, folks, it's bloated. We don't need to, you know, relitigate why the Rockets went down that path. The Rockets, in July 2016, had to get someone to say yes. Getting Ryan Anderson to sign the bottom line was essential in getting Eric Gordon, and getting both of them was essential in getting James Harden to sign his first extension. Also, Nene, there was a trickle-down effect. The Rockets coming off a 41-41 year. Mike D'Antoni's hire being questioned because he had not had success in the NBA in a while. There were not a lot of great narratives for the Rockets on July 2nd, 2016. So say what you will about Ryan, the contract, yes, it's overpaid, but the Rockets had reasons for doing that. And even now, even seeing how overpaid it is, I can't sit here and say that it was honestly a mistake because of all the trickle-down effects. The reality is just one of those things. Sometimes circumstances change, and the Rockets' perception has changed from being a bit desperate, which they were then, to now being able to be so selective that they can appeal to the likes of LeBron James. So because of that, Ryan has gone from essentially a piece you need to a piece that you probably need to ditch, because now you're able to be a lot more choosy when it comes to filling out your roster. And that's not going to make sense for Cleveland. So be it now or this summer, the Rockets are going to have to find someone somewhere else in the NBA to take that contract and probably give cap relief or friendlier contracts to Cleveland in that trade. And in theory, if you could do that now, would the Rockets be open to it? Yes. Now, I don't think it's going to be easy because the Rockets do value this season very heavily as well. And even if Ryan's not the biggest contributor, at the same time, he has had positive games. He is shooting close to 38% from three on the year, has had a game in the past week. We're in Cleveland, 21-8, plus 39 in his 33 minutes. So all of these things are very real feathers in Ryan's cap. He's a disappointment relative to the contract, but folks, he's starting on a team that has won an absurd amount of basketball games and is near the very top of the Western Conference. So it's not going to be easy for the Rockets as they are right in the midst and gearing up for the final 2 months of the season to playoff run to let him go. However, they do have internal options. We mentioned Gerald Green as a guy that can fill minutes by virtue of having Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, even Trevor Ariza taking more time at the four spot. Also, conceivably, if you trade Ryan, you could become a buyout player for guys at the four spot and that you would have more available minutes to theoretically offer. So there are some paths that you could replace his minutes. And so that's why, while I don't think the Rockets are anxious to make any trades, and I don't expect them to, at the same time, if the contracts were good enough to where it would substantially boost their appeal to Cleveland this summer, would Daryl Morey consider it? Yes, absolutely, I think he would, even if it's a slight downgrade. Again, I think there are enough positive internal candidates and buyouts to replace those minutes. And at some point, the sliding scale, even if you like the team you have now, there's enough reward to where you would move him. And so I think that's why they put out calls. Reality, I don't think that that scenario is going to present itself, because if there are significantly friendlier contracts available, i.e. the same close to $20 million figure, then why would those contracts be available to the Rockets? Why would those two teams, that team, whoever it may be, make the move for Ryan Anderson? What has he showed you to where you're going to be willing to give up contracts that are much friendlier, or what the Rockets perceive the Cavs would see as much friendlier? You have to do your due diligence and see what's out there, but in reality, it's tough to see anyone lining up for a deal. Now, in theory, you might could get a couple of smaller contracts. I'll throw out the scenario this summer that was brought up frequently with regards to the Carmelo three-way, which was rope in Portland and get two contracts like Myers Leonard and Mo Harkless. Those are two, each about $10 million rather than the $20 million of Ryan. So the same overall amount, but in two players rather than one. They all go through the same year in 2020. Well, what if you get two smaller contracts? That might help you a little bit, but it's not like those players are particularly difference makers either. So that's where, if the difference is that small, that's why I think the Rockets go with the status quo. That's why I think it's unlikely that Ryan gets moved, because the types of guys you theoretically could get, even if the Blazers were willing to make an offer like that hypothetical or any other team, odds are those contracts are going to be undesirable as well. So you may as well just roll with what you've got and deal with the problem this summer. The other reason I think the Rockets will probably keep Ryan is that I don't think that he is as unmovable as a lot of folks think. There are a few reasons why the Rockets did not make the move to send Ryan Anderson out last summer. First off, it's not that they couldn't. It was reported by Zach Lowe and Bobby Windhorst of ESPN that teams were asking for two future first-round picks from the Rockets in order to take Ryan Anderson's contract. So it's not that the Rockets could not find a taker for Ryan. It's that they were unwilling to do so. Now, there are a few reasons for that. First, the Rockets had already traded their 2018 first-round pick to the Clippers as part of the Chris Paul trade. They couldn't trade 2019 by rule because you can't trade two future picks in consecutive years. So essentially, all the Rockets theoretically offer were 2020 and 22 first-rounders. Even if they were willing to offer it, that diminished the appeal a little bit around the league, with the first pick not coming for at least basically three more seasons. And beyond that, folks, Carmelo Anthony was not worth it. It was a point where the Rockets, I've said it millions of times, the Rockets were after Carmelo because he was a buy-low candidate. You could see him as a slight upgrade, do many of the same things that Ryan did, only with better playmaking. But folks, Carmelo Anthony was not worth mortgaging your future, going all in, basically trading away all your future draft picks. And you see that in Oklahoma City now, where he's a decent player, but certainly not an all-star, not a true difference maker. So the Rockets held firm. They didn't give those two first-round picks, and Ryan stayed. LeBron James, of course, is different. LeBron James, arguably the greatest player in the history of the sport, is that good. He is that level of difference maker to where the Rockets would give two first-round picks. And after the 2018 draft passes, the draft on June 21st, and LeBron conversation is not going to heat up until the final days of June, the same way that the Chris Paul deal went down last year, then the Rockets would be able to trade their 2019 pick, which is next year. So as opposed to last year when, A, the Rockets weren't willing to offer all that for Carmelo, and B, they couldn't offer, even if they were willing to, a first-round pick until starting 3 years from now, next year, or this summer, I should say, the Rockets will be able to, certainly they'll make their picks available because it's about getting LeBron James, and beyond that, they can trade a pick the very next year. So there are lots of reasons that it's more likely to move Ryan this summer, that they're more able to than they were last, and I'm sure some will say, well, the market's getting even tighter. Lou Williams signed today for a 3-year, $24 million deal. Look how cheap that is. Partial guarantee on the last year. Blah, blah, blah. Yes, salary cap is flattening. I get the market seems to be contracting a little bit. But the flip side is that Ryan Anderson last summer was a 3-year, $60 million contract. This summer, he will be a 2-year, $40 million contract. So even if the market is tightening a little bit, you're also looking at $20 million less in terms of overall payout and one less year. So even if the market does tighten, I think that's offset by the fact that you have Ryan at 2 years, $40 million, rather than 3 years, $60 million. And the reason I highlight Ryan's ability to be moved this summer is to say that if you can move him this summer, unless the contracts you are getting are really, really good, there's no real reason to be desperate and make the move now. You probably deal with that in June if the only options available are just incremental, if any, upgrades, the likes of, again, the Portland package, the hypothetical I threw out there, or anything else you can come up with, where probably the reality is you're taking a bad contract or multiple contracts from other teams as well to make the math work. So the Rockets have to do their due diligence. Again, all it takes is one team to be willing to do something stupid, and Daryl Morey would be happy to take advantage of that. But in reality, I don't see a reason for any team to be willing to give significant assets or a large portion of their cap flexibility for Ryan Anderson. And if they're not, then I don't see the Rockets being desperate to move him, combination of how well the team is playing now and with the likelihood that, yes, I do believe he can be moved this summer. As one example of an opt-in and trade that would get LeBron to Houston, I was playing around with the trade machine a few days ago and looking at potential hypotheticals. You're probably looking at a third team where you would offload Ryan's contract because, as we said, it doesn't make sense for Cleveland. The scenario I came up with had LeBron to Houston, Ryan Anderson to Phoenix, and Eric Gordon and Jared Dudley to the Cavs. Works perfectly. Now, yes, the Rockets could add in some low-cost assets, the likes of Isaiah Hartenstein, Joe Chi. You could also have future picks or other prospects going to Cleveland. And Phoenix, of course, I'm assuming the Rockets would be giving them two first-round picks to take the Ryan Anderson contract. And from there, the Cavs get Eric Gordon, who's an asset, and they get Jared Dudley, who 1 year, $9 million. Not a positive asset, but it's a smaller figure. You can either buy him out, or I'm sure you can find another team to take Jared Dudley. Again, 1 year expiring contract, $9 million. I'm sure you wouldn't have to move significant assets to get another team to potentially take him for a non-guaranteed contract, something along those lines. That's just one example. Obviously, to make the incentive work for everyone involved, you're going to have various picks, younger prospects involved. But the point is, if you can find a taker for Ryan Anderson, there's a very real pathway to LeBron, the same way there was for Chris Paul last June. It's just a matter of finding where the Ryan Anderson fit is. Now, if you could improve that fit this week by moving Ryan somewhere else and getting contracts that you're more likely that either Cleveland would want themselves or Cleveland would see as a positive asset, the same way I'm confident they would see Eric Gordon as a positive asset, then yeah, I'm sure Daryl would do it, and he has to put out signals around the league that he's open. Certainly, word travels fast in this league, especially with social media. But reality, I just don't see it lining up to where there's enough of a fit for the Rockets to make the move tomorrow, and between how good they are as a basketball team, and what, in my opinion, is not an impossible path to dealing him this summer, my strong suspicion is that even though Ryan's available right now, he stays put and is in Houston beyond the trade deadline, and our discussions about dealing Ryan will be tabled until after the season in June. Now, what could happen tomorrow, in my opinion, are smaller deals. We know the Rockets are going to be interested in the buyout market. They have one spot open now. Theoretically, they could open more. We go back and forth saying, well, do they need another guard to provide insurance for the likes of Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, James Harden, because they don't really have a fourth guard they can trust now. We also know they're interested in bringing back Bobby Brown, potentially for that purpose, or maybe even to have him as the fifth guard. But also, rim protection. Do they have enough behind Clint Capella? Do you trust Nene at 35 years old? What do you think of Tarik Black, whose production has been up and down? It's possible the Rockets could go after multiple players in the buyout market, but I think we'll see how they feel about that and what they think their chances are by what happens at the deadline tomorrow. Because, folks, if you want to go after multiple players in the buyout market, the most reasonable way to do that is to offload Tarik Black and Troy Williams, one or both of those guys, onto other teams for essentially cap savings, some sort of heavily protected pick that's probably nothing. Basically, just offload those. Maybe there's some sort of partial guarantee that's out there, just some way that you can shed those spots. Because right now, the Rockets don't want to cut those guys and then sign buyout candidates, because if you cut those guys, you're going to be on the hook for paying them. They're guaranteed their salaries, and because of that, you're going to be pushing closer to the tax line. The Rockets are subject to a hard cap this year. I don't think they're going to get to the hard cap, but the Rockets only want to be subject to the luxury tax this year, not because Tillman Fertitta is cheap, but because if you pay a luxury tax, even a dollar this year, you would be subject to the repeater tax next year for what we all hope is a loaded team involving most of the current cast plus LeBron James. So the Rockets don't want to just cut guys willy-nilly and then bring in buyout candidates just like it's, you know, NBA 2K. They're very mindful of that luxury tax line. So, yes, they can bring in one guy easily and be just fine. They have an open roster spot. But if they see more positions, more spots, maybe more positions, maybe instead of addressing just the guard spot or just the center, we've mentioned the debate in recent days, maybe they want to open up both. The best way to do that is to save a little bit by offloading rather than cutting guys like Troy Williams, Tarik Black, and then you can use that roster spots and any cash savings you get from that to go after buyout candidates, all without pushing you over the luxury tax line. So that, to me, is more realistic. It's not so much a Ryan Anderson trade. Keep your eyes peeled. You never know. You know Daryl Morey is always creative. He will never say no on anything, or never say no chance on anything. He always does his due diligence. But what I do think could happen, and it's not that the Rockets, if a deal doesn't happen, if Tarik and Troy both on one-year deals, just a decent shot, you lose them both this summer anyway. That's another reason why they're available. If the deadline passes and both are still here, is that necessarily that the Rockets are not trying to go after buyout candidates? It could be also that the Rockets have put word out, you know, I'm sure they've had informal discussions with various player representations already. Either they don't like the caliber of players that are going to be out there, or they haven't gotten good responses about potential candidates to join the Rockets, because it's not a given that these players will want to join the Rockets, even though they're a good team. There's not a direct route to playing time, and it's not like the Rockets can offer anything more than the veterans minimum. So again, there's lots of reasons to think that someone will potentially, maybe even more than one, be willing to sign for a cheap veteran deal and essentially play out the string this year in the playoffs on a really good Rockets team, but it's not a given. So I'm sure the Rockets have had those conversations behind closed doors with the agents, and I'm sure they have a sense of the market, both who's going to be available. Of course, they'll have a better sense by the last hour tomorrow of who doesn't, because whoever doesn't get traded, that's what tells you that they could be available by buyouts. Watch guys like Jameer Nelson if the Bulls aren't able to flip them. That's just one example. Do they become available? Same with the Lakers and Brooke Lopez. Yada, yada. We've mentioned the names for days and weeks now. But the bottom line is it's a complicated calculus for Daryl Morey. He is going to be looking at who's available, potentially, who would say yes to the Rockets based on his early discussions with agents, and maybe if he has a good feeling about those two things, then besides just the roster spot they have open now, maybe you also have trades of one or both of guys like Tarik Black and Troy Williams to open up more roster spots and or cash savings to be able to bring in multiple buyout candidates without putting you at the tax line. We'll have to wait and see on that. On the other hand, if both of those guys stick through a deadline tomorrow, it might be a signal that for whatever reason, be it the money, the playing time, or both, the Rockets don't feel that good about being able to add more than one player in buyout discussions, so maybe you shouldn't get your hopes up. Either way, though, I think that's where you're going to learn more tomorrow with Ryan. Again, you never say never, but I would say it's almost a no-brainer that he stays, and if he goes, it's probably because Daryl was just overwhelmed from the standpoint of he shockingly got contracts that are much more movable in a hypothetical LeBron deal this summer. Troy Williams, Tarik Black, that's more interesting because that could signal just how aggressive the Rockets will be and think what their likelihood of success could be on the buyout market for veterans throughout February. That, to me, is the thing to watch tomorrow. What happens with Troy Williams? What happens with Tarik Black? Do they stay? Do they go? And how many roster spots do the Rockets have open after 2 p.m.? That, to me, is the storyline to focus on tomorrow. Not the major trades, but the minor ones, because even if they seem minor, they could be major within a few days once you see who the buyout candidates are and the Rockets start getting involved in those talks as they look to bolster their team. As Craig Ackerman said earlier this week, probably best player available, be it guard, the center spot, even a wing. Just have to wait and see who becomes available in the buyout market. And I think the Rockets, as we said, have already had some conversations as far as how those are going and how optimistic Daryl is. I think we'll find out. The proof will be in the pudding by 2 p.m. tomorrow based on the activity. So Ryan's the leading storyline, but I would be shocked if there's significant movement there. On a lesser scale, there could be a couple of moves tomorrow to better position the Rockets for later this month. That, to me, is what you need to be stay tuned for as we approach 2 p.m. on Thursday afternoon Houston time. Until then, though, I will wrap up the show here because I know we've been going on for quite a while. It's one of our rare double episodes, but between the game tonight and tomorrow's trade deadline, I figured it was a good time to do so. So folks, until the deadline, which I'm sure we'll have another episode afterward breaking down what does or doesn't happen and its implications, I will leave things right here. As always, if you want to follow me on a real-time basis, the easiest place to do that is at Twitter. I am at Ben Dubose, that's B-E-N-D-U-B-O-S-E, and the show is at Locked On Rockets, that is, well, Locked On Rockets, you hear us every day. LockedOnRockets.com is the website, and we mentioned the Twitter, social media. Don't forget, we also have a Facebook. That's Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Those are all ways you can reach out to us, or LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. You get questions about the deadline, questions about the team, suggestions for the show, or inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor, just as our friends at Draft were today. Remember, because it's Draft Wednesday, download that Draft app and use the promo code LORockets, and from there you'll get a $3 ticket to try for free when you make your initial deposit just by using that LORockets promo code. So until tomorrow's trade deadline, I will sign off here. Folks, enjoy your evening. Thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.